Well, hello everybody and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are here for another episode of Turning Towards Life. It is such a joy to be here again, Lizzie, with you. We are recording. We are pre-recording this conversation to take account of the possibility that there may be at least a couple of weeks where it's difficult for us to do this live. So we're making sure that we have conversations in the bank, shall we say. So it's quite a sweet and fun thing to do, to be recording this with you, Lizzie, on a Thursday afternoon in the middle of November instead of a Sunday morning, and not really knowing when this conversation is going to make its way out into the world. It's got one of those strange time shift things with it. But whenever this goes out, welcome to all of you who are with us. Thank you so much for choosing to join us and to listen. You are very, very welcome here, whether you have just found your way to us or whether you've been part of this conversation for many weeks or maybe even many years. You're welcome here with us. And it's lovely to feel the many circles of presence with us and around us as we're starting this conversation for today.
Thanks, Justin. And for this particular episode, we've got a poem by my lovely sister Holly. And the reason we're doing this and getting stuff in the bank, as it were, Justin, is because I have an imminent birthing time coming up. And funnily enough, this beautiful poem by Holly is about birth, but really about openings. And I'm really grateful to her that she knows how to say things and write things that are gifts to us all. So I'm going to read this poem, and Holly, thank you for letting us have permission to share this poem and to talk about it. And I hope you enjoy us reflecting on it when you listen and holding this piece of your heart between our hearts. And most people, Justin, say that when we bring something between us, it's a really luxurious experience to have their work, their writing, held in the way that we hold it. So I hope that is true for Holly as well. So this poem by Holly is called, Holly Holden is her name, if you don't know already, look her up, she's excellent, you can find her, and she has lots of things that she's written and said and does. And this poem is called The Small Things That Carry Love. So here goes. When I gave birth for the first time, my daughter washing up on the shores of my world with such newness and raw need and so many questions swimming in her eyes, I remember not knowing which way was up or who I was or what anything was. I felt like I needed something huge, some great pair of hands to scoop me up and help me find a way to be in this new world I'd been ushered into so slowly and suddenly. I needed a plan for my whole life, how to keep her safe, how to live, how to be this new version of myself that didn't fit yet. And here's what I remember. I remember my mum changing the bin for me and folding a pile of laundry. I remember my husband bringing me dark chocolate and a cup of tea and letting me sleep for half an hour. I remember these small things, because these are the things that mattered most while the tectonic plates shifted inside me. Small, practical, kind things that don't require any words or thinking or explaining or responding to. The small things that whisper, you're okay. The world is still slow and gentle and made of daily tasks. It will wait for you. And so now when I find myself on the other end of another's great crossing of some invisible line, the death of someone or the birth or any slow, sudden change that can come in any number of ways, I've learned to trust that the love I feel and the goodness I want to express will best flow towards this one I love through the simple, practical, almost invisible small things.
Thank you, Lucy. Thank you, Holly. I'm going to read it to you. And before I do, just a reminder that you can always find the sources for any of these conversations in the notes for the podcast and in the weekly email that you can sign up for by coming to our turningtowards.life website. And also every single one of these conversations and every single source is on the turningtowards.life website always. It's a wonderful resource. So this one will be here too by the time you hear this conversation. The small things that carry love. When I gave birth for the first time, my daughter washing up on the shores of my world with such newness and raw need, and so many questions swimming in her eyes. I remember not knowing which way was up, or who I was, or what anything was. I felt like I needed something huge, some great pair of hands to scoop me up and help me find a way to be in this new world I had been ushered into so slowly and suddenly. I needed a plan for my whole life, how to keep her safe, how to live, how to be this new version of myself that didn't fit yet. And here's what I remember. I remember my mum changing the bin for me and folding a pile of laundry. I remember my husband bringing me dark chocolate and a cup of tea and letting me sleep for half an hour. I remember these small things because these are the things that mattered most while the tectonic plates shifted inside me. Small, practical, kind things that don't require any words or thinking or explaining or responding to. The small things that whisper, you're okay, the world is still slow and gentle and made of daily tasks. It will wait for you. And so now when I find myself on the other end of another's great crossing of some invisible line, and now when I find myself on the other end of another's great crossing of some invisible line, the death of someone or the birth or any slow, sudden change that can come in any number of ways, I have learned to trust that the love I feel and the goodness I want to express will best flow towards this one I love through the simple, practical, almost invisible, small things.
Thank you, Justin. So I'm in receipt of the pure kindness in this. And when Hull says the tectonic plates shifting inside, it seems that that's so often what's happening. And it's massive to feel this kind of change, this kind of, as Holly says, tectonic something happening. And for this to be the response. Oh my goodness, like there's so many times when I could think about things shifting and it just creating awkwardness or moving away or not knowing really what to do with people when they're in the tectonic realms. And so this kind of moving towards, but in a very uncomplicated, practical way, just seems so crucial because that message, where did she write that? That message of you're okay, the world is still slow and it will wait for you is implicit in the making of the cup of tea or the giving of the bar of chocolate or the folding the laundry. And so I think the implicit message of those around us when the tectonic plates are shifting is the most deeply, kindly, supportive, holding set of things that I think any of us can hope for in when everything is upside down and the wrong way around and we're entering into a story that we don't even know the sides of yet or the nature of, this whole kind of emergent time in any of our lives, which can be like an inner emergence of, oh gosh, I've just seen the whole world in a whole new way. And now I don't know who I am and what everything is for, which can be maybe somebody dying or some relationship ending or a baby being born or a shift in circumstance or just something happening on the inside that renders us entirely unfamiliar to ourselves or other people unfamiliar to us. And to have this intention of kindness and holding and simplicity around at the same time when it feels like entirely opposite to that. I just so appreciate the feeling of it. And I think because I'm entering into a phase of some tectonic, I can feel the tectonic plates just about to shift. I'm so grateful that this writing and Holly exists with this intention in the world. It's really, really beautiful to me.
Lizzie, you started off by talking about the experience of the receiver, the one who's in the middle of the plate tectonics shifting, which is so beautifully expressed in Holly's writing and so important to hear, that when we're on the inside of an experience, that very often what we need and what we long for is actually very, very simple. And I was partly thinking, as you were talking about the, in the Jewish tradition, which, as you'll know, is mine, Lizzie, around death and mourning, one of the what's the word, requirements, that's not quite the right word, one of the invitations to those who come and accompany people who are mourning, when you turn up for the more organized parts of mourning, is to go and sit with the people who are mourning and to wait to see what they want to say, rather than coming and then having to work it out. And it's such a gift in one way, as to maybe this person just wants a cup of tea, maybe they just want to sit quietly, maybe a hug would be nice. The simple things, always the simple things. And that got me thinking, as also as you were talking, about how a big part of the invitation from Holly here then is also for any of us who are not the person who's in the middle, but who are in one of the circles of support around them, is to recognize that so much of the complication we feel inside of us about what to do in the situation is a combination of a kind of fear that's very actually often the fear of how will it look if I get this wrong? What if I'm the wrong kind of person? What if I don't know what to say? What if it's not enough? What if I feel something I don't want to feel that I can't tolerate? And it's so useful to see that what causes us so much trouble in that is actually something that's quite, I don't mean this in a judgmental way, I just mean it in a very straightforward, obvious way, as something quite egotistical, in the sense it's, how will I be? How will I look? How will I feel? And I could feel it in myself as you were talking, all the times that's happened to me, all the times that somebody I sort of know who's in a terrible time has been walking down the street, and there have been parts of me that go, cross the road, which is such a, you know, there's so much shame in that feeling of, I would cross the road to avoid speaking to someone, but there are parts of me that are so worried about getting it wrong or looking bad, or frankly just feeling ashamed or something. So it's so important to have reminders like Holly's with us, because there is, of course, all the work that any of us can do to work with our own inner systems of shame, parts of us that are ashamed and parts of us that are afraid and parts of us that want to protect us and all of that, which is such wonderful work to do. But the shortcut when we're with somebody who's in the middle of a tectonic change, like a birth or a death or a who knows what, the shortcut is to go straight into Holly's very, very kind words, which is, what this person probably needs is the simplest thing. A cup of tea, a bar of chocolate, a hug, a smile, a hello, all of those things are actually, and it's such a, we can unwittingly get into such a tragedy, a sort of collective tragedy of feeling so worried about our own, how we'll be in that situation, that we end up doing nothing, or worse, isolating somebody who could really, really, really do with. So isn't it such a gift? I love it. Where is it? I want to just quote Holly. where she says, oh yeah, that's the line. Small, practical, kind things that don't require any words or thinking or explaining or responding to. That is a giant liberation. And it seems to me is pretty much always true. That's the other thing about it, is it could be a birth or a death, or it could just be a person that you care about.
I love that, Justin. It's like a little checklist of, something tectonic is happening inside of another person. I'm feeling awkward and I don't really know what to do or how to approach because I'm making it about me. So, and that happens and that's normal. So what can I do that doesn't require any language or thinking or explaining or responding to? And having that as a little checklist of, you know, what springs to mind is like dropping some food outside somebody's door and texting them and telling them it's there, or sending a card that just says something on the front, even with your, you know, who's it from, or something really simple, so that that implicit message can reach the person without them having to engage in anything, but that they know and feel the simple care that's there. It's really powerful and it really matters. And I think it's particularly receivable when the tectonic realms arrive in us too. Like I don't even know how to say this, but like when I feel like the upside downness that Holly talks about at the beginning of this poem, I'm particularly susceptible to those things. I can feel that they're not separate from one another. Like they're energetically kind of matched to each other. Like at the moment with my tectonicness shifting, like the other day I walked outside and I couldn't do my shoelaces up because my tummy is really big and I can't bend over for more than a couple of seconds without it just being impossible. I can't really see my feet and things. And I walked out and just thought, oh God, who's out here who could help me do my shoelaces? I can't walk around without my shoelaces done up because I'll probably fall over. And there was a builder walking past and I said, this is a bit unusual, but would you be able to do my shoelace? And it made me cry that he said, of course I can. And then when he tied it, he said, is that okay? Is that tightness okay? And like the tenderness with which this man tied my shoelace, I didn't cry at the time because I didn't want to, you know, create some strangeness for him having to cope with me. But afterwards, I properly wept with gratitude that he had treated me so kindly and so gently. And it was one of these things. It really was one of these things. And so my susceptibility to that is really present because there's a kind of undoneness, an upside downness, not knowing what is next and who I am and how to meet the next, I don't know, landscape of my life that I don't understand yet and what it is, and being on the precipice of that. These things are really, they're what's needed because it's what the opening is receptive to as well.
Lizzie, you'll know this, that we're recording this in mid-November 2023. So that's the only bit, that's the bit that only you and I know. And as I'm sure many people will know right now, or maybe remember if you listen to this some months or years hence, we're in a particularly, what feels like a particularly troubled time in the world. And you and I have been talking about what kind of sources we want to bring at this moment. And there's a theme emerging of these, you know, what it is to tie a shoelace for another person. I could feel one of the great complications of this time, and I'm going to refer very specifically to the thing that's happening, which is the war in Israel and Gaza that has broken out, that had as its immediate precipitating factor a horrible massacre in Israel, and it's all of this pain and violence that is unfolding subsequent to it, and I'm bringing it up here. I didn't even know if it was ever going to come into our Turning Towards Life conversation. Here it is. I'm bringing it up here because one of the things that I think has been very difficult for many people in this time is that there's an enormous amount of pain, many people feeling pain. I know many Jewish people are in terrible pain and anguish and trauma, and many Palestinian people are in terrible pain and all over the world, anguish and trauma, and many, many other people are feeling it as well. And there's a parallel to Holly's source here because one of the things that gets very difficult, I think, is all the calculation we do when we meet somebody who in any way is feeling any pain over this. Can I say this? Can I say that? What's the politics of it? If I say something to you, am I standing for one side and not another side, and are there even sides? And is it the way to think about it? And what will it mean? And what does it mean about my political commitments? All of that. And it turns out, at least from my experience of feeling very traumatized and grief-filled in recent weeks, that every time somebody has just done the equivalent of make a cup of tea and gone, this must be really hard. Let me give you a hug. Can I make you a cup of tea? Can I just tell you that I'm thinking of you and recognizing it's hard? It has been everything that Holly says. The simple, practical, almost invisible small things that don't come with politics, and they don't come with somehow I have to fit myself into a giant world system of anything. There is just a human being here who is hurting in some way that I can probably never tell because it's their hurting. They're in the middle of a tectonic plate. There is one thing I can always do. Always do. No matter who this person is, no matter anything else, I can say, would you like some tea? Or something that is exactly equivalent to it. My experience over this 6 weeks has been that that never fails, because that's the level, that is the level that we long for from one another. As Holly says, the world, our worlds are actually made of a web of real, immediate, intimate contact. So I feel like I've really been in the midst of this, of these last few weeks, of feeling what it's like to be the recipient. And I'm not giving birth, and I'm still alive. So I'm not, at least today, on the threshold of some other great crossing that I can feel or know about. And I'm so grateful that the simplest thing is also the most meaningful thing. It's sort of so paradoxical in a way, for particularly any of us who like to think large and think a lot about things, that what we need and what we most long for is actually what is most immediate. It's as close as the glasses on the ends of our noses. It's right here, and it's always right here in any circumstance. But we forget because we're complicated.
Well, and Justin, I think one of the most torturous things about this whole time is that we see so much of the need for these small acts of love, and we can't do anything about it. You know, watching the news, all that happens to me is like, what does this person need? And then there's no action that I can take that's one of these ones that doesn't require any words or explaining or responding to. And I think that's why it's so, well, firstly, why this time is so hard is that it's like a horrible definition of a horrible enactment of a feeling of powerlessness to do these things, which are profoundly human things to do, and how we can't provide that kindness in all of the ways that we would like to, because things are far away and things are happening that are out of our control, and we have no way of making this kindness and this warmth so to whoever we can see is suffering. And secondly, I feel like it just shows how human it is to do this. You know, so it's like so human to want to say, do you want a cup of tea, or can I help, or would you, what do you, you know, could I, I'm going to bring you some food or a blanket, you know, whatever the thing is. And so it's really helping me, you saying this, Justin, because I realize that my trauma in this time is, yes, I can maybe do that to some people close by. I live in London in the United Kingdom. I'm not able to contact and be in relationship with almost every single person who's impacted by what's happening. And this is what's needed. And so I'm really feeling how this is our true nature. You know, this is what we're actually like as human beings, is that we feel this wish and this move towards kindness in the vast, 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 profound majority of humanness. That's what we're like. And then to be held back from that and to see things that we can do nothing about, seemingly. And of course, there's things we can do, but largely in our homes, it's really hard. And how awful it is that we can't do the thing that we would all like to be doing, which is the thing that's most human about us.
Yes. There's such a beautiful and clear way of talking, Lizzie, that when we see suffering of people far away and we feel the stirrings in us of this thing that I agree is our basic humanity, I very, very, very firmly committed to the sense that given half a chance, what we want to do is to love and be loved. We don't want to hate and hurt and be hurt in response. It's not what we want. And so when we see people far away that we can't, that we long to offer this kind of response to, it's impossibly painful. It awakens all of that pain. So then I want to come back to Holly's words and recommit to them even more so, because there's another actually phrase from my own tradition, Lizzie, that's been very important to me for a long time, which is translates into English as that the world is made from loving kindness. And I also think that's true. And when I hear you talk about what it's like to watch the news and to see people across a large distance in a situation which you can't reach, you can't bring that person a cup of tea or a hug or all the things that you long to bring. And I feel that too. It rekindles in me a wish to really, really attend to the parts of me that get frightened of somebody walking down the street who's mourning, and the part of me that gets, oh, how will I feel and how will I be and will I know the right thing to say and wants to cross the road, to do everything I can to take care of those frightened parts so that I'm not the person who crosses the road, because the world is built on loving kindness. That's how we build a world. So it is doubly when there are people I can't help, when I can feel my pain and not being able to be this kind of response to people on the TV or people I know who are far away or people I'm reading about, whatever it is. Let me be the one who does the small things that whisper, you're okay, I'm here. Expressing, I'm just reading Holly, trusting the love I feel and the goodness I want to express and flowing, letting them flow towards. Because actually, in response to the terrors and traumas of the world, which mostly I can do nothing directly about and just feel the pain of them, there are difficulties and traumas and loss and sorrow and worry and fear and all of that that's right in close, and I can respond to it. If I'm prepared to find my own loving kindness and trust it in the way that Holly invites us to do, and then act on it and not act out of my fear or out of my shame or out of any of the self-protective things that would. And if I'm prepared not to be to try to be look clever or anything and just do really simple things like a lasagna on the doorstep, that being in this conversation with you is really, in a very profound way, remind having me remember a wish and a vow, really, to do everything I can to be this person in the everydayness of ordinary life, in my home, on my street, with my colleagues, everywhere I can. It seems to me a very excellent sized response.
I'm just noticing, Justin, often it feels to me like turning towards life and being in these conversations with you, I feel some parts of me feel like the scale of the world and these conversations are just really different to one another. And so we're never going to address the things that need to be addressed here. Just this is never going to happen. And then we have conversations like this that somehow marry up the scales for me. Like, yes, there's these huge things that I don't know how we're ever going to get better and what's going to happen. And goodness knows whether anything is going to even be all right for massive, massive swathes of people in the world. And then when we get to this place where I think, oh, there's something that can be done, like I can feel my agency returning, that it, yes, is not solving the whole world's problems, but it is an individual possibility that I can live. And that really matters to me. And often I think that's what happens in our conversations, is that the magnitude of the world kind of comes right into the conversation, and then we find a step that we can take, which is a step, even though it's not solving everything, it still is a step. And I love that that's a possibility here, that I can bring myself back to something that is possible rather than just experiencing the impossibility of everything, which often happens at times of world turmoil and tectonic plates shifting and all of that kind of thing. So I'm really grateful, and really grateful that really that's what Holly's writing is what's the little step I can take that has you feel implicitly supported and loved. And I'm really grateful for that. And thank you, Justin, for being in the challengingness of everything and being here and being in the conversation and delicately choosing sources that we can feel able to bring. And who knows what's going to be happening whilst this goes into the world. But I also just want to say thank you to everybody for, when it does go out, I'll probably be in some tectonic process. So I just want to say thank you to everybody for that support, and to you as well. And the next episode of this will be put on to our platforms the Sunday after whatever this one has gone on. And I just want to say thank you to everybody, and thank you to you, Justin, for doing that as well. And we will see you next time.
Thanks, Lizzie. Thanks, everyone.